Welcome, Tammy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tammy Murphy, and I'm here from the Social Sciences Branch of the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. And I'm here today to let you know about some new data collection initiatives the Social Science Branch is launching this summer. The motivation behind these data collection efforts is really to follow along with the recommendations that we've been receiving from various folks for some time. If you were to look back at the Touchstone report, you'll see that there's a recommendation that social and economic data collection be ramped up. We also have a broad mandate to include social and economic data in the analysis of proposed regulations. So we're really trying to build a collection of both economic and social data that we have. And this is a broader part of our performance measures program, which I believe the council has seen before, but I'll just briefly touch on. The goal of the performance measures program is really to take a look at how fisheries are performing, not only biologically, but also economically and socially. So we do care about things such as how fishermen are doing in terms of economic viability, but we're also looking at how fishermen in different fisheries are doing in their everyday lives, both as fishermen, but also as members of a broader community. We really wanted to go about collecting data more routinely on a regular basis rather than in reaction to a proposed management regulation. So the idea is that we will continue to collect this data across fisheries on an ongoing basis rather than in a reactive manner. Some of you are probably familiar with our groundfish report that was produced last year. This is an example of how we're really trying to increase communication with stakeholders and to report out on fisheries on a regular basis. This year, we will be repeating the groundfish report, and we will also be producing a monkfish fisheries performance report. And we're really hoping to produce documents which can be a source of go-to information for everyone who's interested in the performance of the fishery and that can serve as a common ground for discussion. We're also interested in taking a hard look at the MSA standards and the goals and objectives in the various FMPs and measuring whether or not we are achieving those goals, looking at where we're succeeding, where we're failing, and trying to take some lessons away from that. And finally, we're interested in comparing fisheries performance under various regulatory mechanisms, for example, catch share versus non-catch share fisheries. Just very briefly, the socioeconomic performance measures program is spread over five broad areas, and those five broad areas are financial viability, which looks at things like profitability and productivity, distributional outcomes, which looks at how landings are distributed across ports, looks at employment outcomes across ports, looks at concentration in fisheries with regard to ownership, looks at ease of entry into fisheries, et cetera. We also have the performance measure of stewardship, which looks at the degree to which participants in the fishery feel a sense of conservation ethic toward the marine resource. It also looks at whether or not they perceive the regulations are effective in stewardship of the resource. We have the performance measure of governance, which takes a look at participants' attitudes toward governance, whether they perceive the regulations to be clear, adaptable, whether or not they perceive them to be fair, the degree to which fishermen participate in the governance process, the degree to which there's conflict within the governance process. And our final performance measure is well-being, which really takes a step back and views the fisherman not only as a fisherman but also as an entire individual who interacts with his community, looks at things like health insurance status, looks at things like his degree of connectedness to his community, both the immediate fishing community and the broader community. So the performance measures program serves as a basis for two data collection efforts that we're going to launch this summer. The first one is a socioeconomic survey. This will be done for both vessel owners and vessel crew members in the Northeast. We will be sending out a survey this summer to 800 vessel owners, and that survey will go to owners across fisheries. We will also be surveying crew on the docks in various ports over the next year, and we're currently developing a schedule of ports based on trying to capture port diversity and also trying to capture seasonality in the landings of various species. We will be surveying about 1,300 crew members in the next year. The second major data collection effort that we have is the Northeast Fishing Vessel Annual Cost Survey. This is a survey of vessel owners, which will go out in July. We will be surveying 1,700 vessel owners in the Northeast. This next slide. This next slide gives you an overview of the two survey efforts. Again, the Vessel Annual Cost Survey will go to 1,700 vessel owners in the Northeast, and we're stratifying that sample by vessel size and by gear type. This is a mail survey, and the owner will have the option to either return it in hard copy, postage paid, or they will be able to complete it online using a secure code. The second survey effort that we have is the socioeconomic survey. It is split into two components for vessel owners and then for vessel crew members. The vessel owners will be surveyed by mail, and the crew members will be surveyed on the docks using an intercept approach, asked to complete a survey using an interviewer and a tablet. We're actually using the Nooks for that. We are going to have the option for the crew member to take the survey in either Spanish or Portuguese. And this socioeconomic survey is stratified according to fishery. So all federally managed fisheries are included. If we look at more specifically the types of questions that we're asking, the Northeast Vessel Annual Cost Survey is a survey that has been done in the past by the Social Sciences Branch, most recently from 2006 to 2008. One of the reasons that that survey was stopped was because of a poor response rate. So we've really worked hard to put together an instrument that is more clear and more accessible for folks to take. We've also tried to give them a different option in the sense of allowing them to return it on the web rather than simply by mail. We've spent a lot of time pre-testing this instrument, and I do believe that it has paid off. We're going to be analyzing cost across fisheries, vessel sizes, and gear types. And the idea is to build upon the data that we have to analyze the financial viability and distributional outcomes in the various fisheries and how those vary with different management approaches. The survey is basically divided into five components. Very briefly, we have some descriptive information about the vessel, how it's owned, how many people it's owned by, etc. We ask a lot of information looking at repair, maintenance, and upgrade costs, and also some questions related to fishing business-related costs. These would be costs such as docking and mooring fees, vessel hull insurance, crew payments, etc. We also asked questions about operating cost. Initially, the survey did not include those costs because those costs are collected by observers. However, we found in our pretest that when we didn't address those types of costs, the owners struggled a little bit. They really wanted to give us that information, and they felt like the survey was somehow incomplete. So we do have a section on those costs, and we will be looking at that in comparison to the trip costs that the observers collect on board. And those are your costs such as your fuel, your ice, your bait, etc. We also have questions about lay systems, and we're particularly interested in how lay systems may vary across fisheries and also how crew expenses may be changing over time in terms of what the crew members are being asked to pay. Very briefly, looking at the socioeconomic survey, this survey is really designed to build the four performance measures of distributional outcomes, governance, stewardship, and well-being. We ask a lot of questions with respect to employment and income, specifically, for example, whether or not the fisherman, be he an owner or be he a crew member, has other sources of income. We ask about how easy it is to find employment for crew members. We also ask vessel owners how satisfied they are with their current crew and whether or not they've had difficulty retaining quality crew. We have a series of questions around governance, looking at the degree to which the fisherman's participated in the fisheries management process, why or why not, how he perceives the regulations, whether or not he feels the process is fair, whether or not he feels that regulations are easy to comply with, etc. We have a series of questions around stewardship that look for activities that the fisherman may engage in that he believes help preserve the stock. We also ask questions about high grading, bycatch, and discard activities and perception of trends in those activities. And finally, we have a series of questions around well-being. Again, this is really to capture how the fisherman's doing in a broader sense beyond his immediate economic viability as a fisherman. We ask questions about community involvement. We ask questions about whether or not the fisherman would recommend fishing to a young person. And this is especially interesting to us because one of the things we keep hearing about is the aging of the fishermen as a group. This survey is especially important to us because in addition to asking questions around these specific performance measures, it also collects basic demographic information, which is particularly important to us for crew. As you may know, we have very little information on crew and how different regulations may be impacting crew. So this is really a push to go ahead and get that information. Overall, we, as a branch, we are really trying to take on a little bit of a new approach. We're really trying to get out and engage the community much more. We've done a series of pretests around this survey. We've also been trying to interact directly with community fishing organizations. We've recently been to speak to the Commercial Fisheries Research Foundation and also to the Northeast Seafood Coalition. We're continuing to try to build those connections. We've done a series of focus groups with fishermen both in Rhode Island and in Maine. And we're really trying to get out there and involve fishermen earlier in the process in these data collection efforts. One of the things that we've heard repeatedly is that fishermen really feel like they're giving us a lot of information and they don't necessarily distinguish between what they give the social sciences branch and what they give everyone else. But we're really trying to address one concern we've heard, which is that fishermen feel like they share this information but they have no idea what actually happens to it. To that end, the branch is going to be launching a new website this summer, and you'll be able to see the survey data as it comes in. It will be updated monthly with some general descriptive summary statistics, and then there will also be links to any reports that include the use of that data. We also are trying to really minimize the burden that fishermen face. Some of the way that we have done that is by redesigning the cost survey to make it simpler. We also are giving an option to return it on the web. And finally, in the past, the cost survey has been done more or less as a census, where every fisherman would receive a survey every year. That's no longer going to be the case. So we're really working hard to reduce that burden. And finally, we're here because we want to make you aware that these survey efforts are going on, but we also are welcoming any feedback that you may have or any suggestions about how the branch can really increase its outreach to the community. And I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Tammy. Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for the presentation, Tammy. Very informative. I don't know if you know that the Touchstone report a couple years ago was critical of the fact that we weren't measuring our performance, how we were doing. We'd know from a biological standpoint whether overfishing was occurring or if a stock was overfished, but we didn't know the social and economic indicators and we weren't tracking them. So the council hired contractor George LaPointe to get us a quick and dirty online system that we'd work with the Science Center and the regional office to, you know, have like a dynamic safe report, status of the fishery, and track things over time. And this followed on the heels of that very detailed report on sectors, which we were kind of told, don't expect this for all, at least not right away for all our plans. So here's my concern, and the question might be towards to Bill, but I'm concerned that there aren't a lot of resources in the social science branch, and that measurement, assessment, how are we doing, is every bit as important as preparing the NEPA document to what are the impacts of this. And I'm afraid we've gotten great support on the NEPA. If we put in these five alternatives, how will these alternatives impact the industry, catch, economic, social? It's kind of forward-looking analysis, not hindcasting how did we do. So I don't think you have enough resources to do both right. So that's my question. Do you have enough resources? It needs two divisions, one to look ahead and support management in the analysis, social and economic analysis of management measures, and then it takes another group of people to assess how we're doing by each plan. So I don't want to lose the level of support that we get on the NEPA documents looking ahead. So can you assure us that this effort on performance won't take away from NEPA?
Mr. Chairman, Paul, the short answer is no. to be frank, I mean, I agree entirely that this process of looking back, evaluating success, and the feedback loop, which helps us collectively to improve what we're doing, is really essential. And I think that that's a skill set that we have and that we need to invest more in to advise the regional office and the council. So to the extent that we can, we will continue the whole spectrum of activities. But there's going to be some balancing here that's going to be challenging, I think.
I have myself on number two on the list. On your slide number 8, under the annual cost survey, you have the second bullet was repair, maintenance, upgrade, improvement costs. How much of that looks at, let me jump back, you know, a while ago this council asked the Coast Guard to provide us with some numbers on the age of the fleet. You talk about the age of the fishermen, we were looking at the age of the fleet. And what was made quite obvious to us was that the fleet in the groundfish area is getting quite old. And so in looking at costs and upgrade improvement costs, are you looking at what the industry is looking at down the road a little bit as to, you know, total replacement costs and, you know, how, you know, What are those? How do they handle these kinds of costs? And you know how? I mean, I think that to me that's an extremely important item to begin to get a handle on versus just the annual cost.
Okay. We will be collecting this cost data from year to year. To answer your question, we do ask the fisherman to estimate the market value of his vessel, including the permits, with an emphasis on the idea of this is not what you might like to get for your vessel. This is not what you paid for your vessel. This is what you think you could realistically get for your vessel today. And one of the things we have heard repeatedly is that the permits are worth more than the vessel. In terms of the specific section that you're talking about with the repair, maintenance, and upgrade cost, we did struggle a bit with that section because one man's improvement is another man's upgrade. So we do ask the fisherman to categorize it, but we also ask he or she to describe the actual activity. So there are expenses that they may be occurring in 2011, which is the year that we ask about, that they might not incur for another couple of years. Likewise, there could be an expense that they don't incur in 2011 that they're going to have to incur in 2012 or 2013. And we would hope to pick that up over time as we move through. But there is no explicit question to the nature that you're talking about.
I have Jim Odlin, Dave Gaethel, and I saw some other hands.
Yeah, I think market value of a boat is useless. You need to look at replacement value. A fleet that's 35 years old has to be replaced. So you have to put that in your calculation, not the market value. It doesn't mean anything. It changes day to day. So with an old fleet, you've got to look at, okay, that somebody's going to be faced with replacing these vessels in a very short period of time, and we need to be figuring out how much that's going to cost. And that has to be in part of your report. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dave Gaither.
Hi. I wanted to tell you that I think your work is very important to us. It's information that we desperately need. I also think that, you know, we like to tell people we manage fish, but really we manage people and their behavior, and we apply that to the fish. So the results of these surveys will be important to us. I wanted to hone in on one slide. In my copy here, it's slide 8. At the bottom of it, it's the one that says lay systems.
Yes.
This is an extremely important question, and it really has a number of parts, because the lay system under sectors has changed. So there needs to be a number of questions here, such as, do you lease fish? And if the answer to that is yes, then how do you apply the cost of leasing fish? Because it has become the biggest cost now in a ground fish boat, and it's affected the crew greatly. I mean, I know for myself, I've tried two different methods of dealing with it. The boat can't absorb it. I can tell you that right out. Anybody that's just charging it off to the boat share is going broke. But last year, as an example, I had the fish that were gifted to me went to one crewman, and then the crewman in the fall was a different person. He was working on lease fish. And when I realized that he wasn't getting much more than minimum wage after we took the lease fish off the top, I changed the system this year to take a flat, in this case I'm trying 30 cents a pound off all the fish and see if I can raise enough money to cover the lease fish that I have to buy so that one crewman doesn't make relatively reasonable sums of money and another person works for, you know, minimum wage or even maybe less if you have a bad trip. So that question's really going to need to be teased apart because this council desperately needs to know the effects of leased fish on both not only owners but on captains and crew as well, because it's really going to the heart of what's going to happen in ground fish. We have to have this information.
We are aware of your concern. We do ask both about how things have been done in the past and how they may have changed in the last year, including the specific concern that you're talking about, and in what costs are getting passed along to the crew that may not have been passed along to the crew prior. But thank you for your comment.
Anyone else? Mary Beth.
Just to follow up a little bit on that, I appreciate the answer because that was what I was thinking as Dave was talking about it. His example of lease fish is interesting, but those aren't the only costs that end up getting passed on to the crew. You know, it depends on what costs are being imposed on a particular fleet for any particular reason. And, you know, our discussions tomorrow about observer coverage, where is that going to come from? And, you know, for the groundfish fishery, when they have to start absorbing those costs, where is that going to come from? And, you know, your crewman who is at, you know, minimum wage, you know, maybe cut that in half when you start paying for observer costs. I mean, all these things, they accumulate. Mm-hmm. And also, I think, Jim, to follow on to Jimmy's comment about replacement vessels, I don't know how you estimate what it costs to replace a vessel. I think that, you know, we should make some suggestions, you know, not today on how one does that, but I think to sit down with maybe a few people who are actually doing that on a regular basis and how those costs change over time. Every time the cost of steel changes, you know, the estimate going into a yard is going to change. The new legislation that was passed that's going to increase safety, well, it's also going to increase the cost of replacing a vessel. So, you know, there's lots of moving parts and pieces, but to the extent that you could try to get at some of that, I would encourage you to at least try.
Yeah, we are trying. I mean, it's not perfect. We do know from our pretest that people do struggle with that question, and people think about market value in different ways. We're constantly trying to do a better job, and we did make quite a few changes after the focus groups that we did. We also intend to continue to launch a second year of this survey, and the idea is that as we go along, we'll get better and better at it. But I do agree with you that it's a complicated issue, and we can certainly benefit from any suggestions. And with respect to the issue of other expenses that crew may be asked to absorb, we're definitely aware of that. We're asking questions about that both in the socioeconomic survey of crew and in the vessel annual cost survey of owners. We're very aware of the observer cost issue, and our hope is that over time we can track how the burden on crew may be changing.
Rodney.
Yeah, thank you. Jimmy and David made some good points that I was going to make. But the cost of replacing the vessel is going to go up after July of this year because of some safety regulations that they have to abide by. So it's going to go up between $50,000 and $100,000, even if you were replacing the same boat. The other thing I want to address is some of the crews don't even know the lay they're on, because if they ask to see a settlement sheet, they get fired. So they just get a paycheck. So that's going to be pretty hard information for you to collect.
We are aware of that. We, in our meetings with some fishermen in Rhode Island, we did hear that some crew never see a settlement sheet. They really don't have an understanding of how they're paid. And we do have an option for the crew member to indicate that he simply doesn't know.
Just a minute. I finished. Anybody else on the council? I go to the audience. Alan.
Ellen Gaethel, fishing vessel Ellen Diane, and NEF's fishing sectors 11 and 12. I don't know how many members off the top of my head. I'm very sorry about that. I did have some questions here because this is a really important piece for us. And it doesn't say anything here, and I'm just building on what everyone else has said. The increased cost once sectors went in to the fishermen for the sector cost, the permit cost, and the leasing, specifically the leasing costs to the owners and to the fishermen. And on top of that, the decrease in the value of permits that were purchased under days at sea that do not have poundage on them. I mean, that the decrease in value is horrific. So are you addressing these specifically? Thank you.
We do have questions that get at each issue that you've mentioned. I did not want to go through the entire survey here, but we do have questions that look at those specific costs. And I'd be happy to share a copy of the survey instrument with anyone electronically.
Thank you.
Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jeff Kalin with Lunds Fisheries in Cape May, New Jersey, and our company owns 11 boats and runs a processing plant also. And my question is, first of all, I wanted to say the replacement cost discussion that you had is really important for us as vessel owners, but there's a whole processing and distribution part of this business that employs an awful lot of people too. I mean, we employ crew and so forth, but whether it's bait, trucking, and I just wonder if you're going to be getting into those impacts also, because even though we're down in Cape May, there's the scallop fishery, monkfish, groundfish, herring, skates. We're involved in all of those, so it's also the extra regional cost too that these things will go. These costs here, the decisions in New England, will certainly carry over down as far as Cape Hatteras. So I wonder if you're thinking of that end of the business and that scope too. Thanks.
We are aware that we have a lack of data with respect to the processing group, and there has actually been a grant awarded by Science and Technology to one of our branch social scientists and economists named Barb Browntree. She is beginning that work now, and I can certainly refer you to her for more details of that work.
Okay, that's important. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Thank you, Tammy, for that report.
Thank you very much for your time.
We will move on to the next agenda item. Agenda item.